are made from the gel of an extinct plant, and stalked back to his room to look at his capes again, trying to deny what was likely happening in the shower. Lando sat beside the wet bar, clutching a glass of whiskey, only one. L3 would have a fit if he were caught drinking on the job, but he needed something to calm himself down while he waited to see what the Wookiee had done to his bathroom. He tapped his toes in irritation until Chewbacca emerged an hour later, looking much cleaner. He nodded his thanks to Lando and growled and left the room.
At least he said thank you, Lando thought,
and got up to see the damage.
Oh, mercy!
What did I do to deserve these beings on my ship? He whispered.
Hair was everywhere. Dirty brown water still sat in the bottom of the shower because of a huge hunk of brown hair clogging the drain. More hair was wiped on the wall, and a ball of it hung off the sink.
Ugh. Lando touched a strand with distaste.
Product was smeared everywhere as well, splattered on the mirror, as if Chewbacca had tried everything Lando had, and not known his own strength, so he wasted a spurt of each one. Three bottles of product lay on their sides on the floor of the shower. Chewie had apparently found something he liked and used all of it. And of course it had to be the best thing he had. No cheap detangler for this Wookiee. He dragged a fingertip through a puddle of purple goop and inhaled the scent. The last time he would smell this extinct flower, and he would forever associate it with the scent of wet Wookiee. He began to tally the bill he planned on handing Beckett at the end of this whole thing, the one that marked down everything he and his crew ate, drank, or smudged with even a tiny mark on his beloved Falcon. He sighed and removed his cape. He couldn't fly knowing his bath looked like this.
"People say Wookiees are clean," he muttered, rolling up his sleeves. "Now we know how they get that way."
He leaned over the shower drain. Might as well start with all the hair. Kira avoided Han and Beckett arguing in the lounge and went to the cockpit. She was curious about this droid Lando had and wanted to talk to the only other female on the ship. She entered the cockpit and stood behind the co-pilot's seat. The droid didn't pay any attention to her. She said, not sure how to start a conversation with an opinionated droid.
How much longer till we reach Kessel?
What do you care? We get there when we get there. You want to talk about something else? So talk. Don't waste my time with pleasantries. I get enough of that from him.
She pointed to the pilot's seat.
I've never seen a droid like you, Kira said,
sitting behind L3 in the jump chair.
I just wanted to get to know you.
Oh, what are you going to do about your little problem?
The droid said.
What problem?
Kira said in surprise. Now the droid indicated out the door and down the hall from the cockpit and rotated her head to look at Kira. She pointed at Kira's wrist, where she had a brand of the Crimson Dawn.
That brand says you're committed. But that human male's heart palpitations indicate that he is in love with you,
she said, her voice taking on a tone that implied Kira was an idiot. Kira laughed nervously.
Han is not in love with me.
It's hard sometimes. I know it.
Kira snapped out of her wariness.
How do you know it?
She asked.
My situation,
she said, pointing at her own chest and giving the droid equivalent of a sigh.
Lando is in love with me, but it simply can't be. You don't get into a relationship with your captain. It would ruin our partnership.
She waited a beat, then added,
anyway, he's not quite my type.
Kira worked to keep her face still. Well, how do you feel about him?
Sometimes I think, maybe. But no, it would never work.
K
Kira dared to ask the obvious.
How would it work, exactly?
The droid swiveled her head to look at Kira, and simply said,
It works.
She looked back to her controls.
What is your story? You have a history with that male human, but it seems things are different now.
Kira had calmed herself and was able to answer with a straight face.
We tried to escape Corellia together. He got out. I didn't.
The memories came back to her in a rush. Han's face was stricken as he disappeared into the crowd, as he went free, on the other side of the wall. He didn't want to leave her, that much was clear. That helped a little, but not much. It would have been worse if he'd come back. Then they both would be caught, their bribe gone, and in the hands of the White Worms. Now it was just Kira in that position. Rebolt's fingers dug into her upper arms, and he made a face.
You stink! Did you fall in a barrel of eels or something?
Moloch hurried up with some stormtroopers.
Where is Han?
He demanded.
Gone!
Rebolt said.
She won't be happy.
He looked at the troopers.
Can you get us on the other side of the wall?
If he's on the other side, he's a different unit's problem now.
Said the trooper on the left. The other one nodded at Kira.
It looks like you have this under control.
Moloch didn't move, probably glaring at them, but the effect was lost within the Enviro suit.
Fine. Get the hounds, Rebolt. I'll take care of this one. I believe Lady Proxima's going to want a word with her.
She had to wait until nightfall, sitting in a cell devoid of light, before Lady Proxima would see her. She squinted against the dim glow in the hallway as Moloch opened her cell door.
She wants to talk to you alone. I told her it was a dumb idea. You do know if you hurt her again, you'll be a smudge beneath my boot in seconds.
Kira wanted to point out that it was Han who had hurt her, but since he had gotten away, she now had to stand for his crimes too. Resentment. A seed planted in dry ground at the spaceport got a little bit of water and began to squirm very slightly in her chest. Lady Proxima rose from her pool, looking more horrid than ever. The scrum rats had put a heavy tarp over the broken window, but it didn't block all sunlight, and Kira had already seen what just a small exposure could do. Thus Lady Proxima was only receiving guests at night now. She still wore her bangles and armor. At first Kira thought she was vain and hadn't wanted to remove them. But then she noticed, with horror, that many of her rings had become embedded in the blistered skin. It had to be painful to have them there, but it would have been excruciating to remove them.
Kira! I had such hopes for you,
Lady Proxima said.
You are quick on your feet. You think fast. You plan better than any scrum rat in this place. I wish you could have stayed with me.
I serve only, Kira said, bowing her head.
No more lies!
Lady Proxima screamed, startling Kira.
You will not speak again! Not to apologize, not to sweet-talk me, not to get out of this! I should tear your tongue out for what you've done, but he wants your tongue intact.
Kira swallowed her fear, wondering whether to worry more about the tongue threat or who he was. She nodded obediently.
I have sold you to a slave dealer.
Lady Proxima said, almost conversationally, and Kira's heart sank.
You did not fetch a good price. Disobedience is considered a very bad quality for a slave. But your other attributes were enough to interest him. I have full confidence that he will scour the fight right out of you.
He didn't. But soon, Kira was sold again to a different master, Dryden Voss. The first year was hell, with numerous escape attempts and beatings. Nothing would break her spirit. Nothing would stop her from trying to get free. But one night, everything changed. She had killed her guard and made it as far as an escape pod in Dryden Voss's star yacht. She hadn't expected Dryden to be there, waiting for her, his face black with rage.
"My Kira,"
he said sadly, the red veins in his face slowly fading.
"We have reached an impasse. I paid a fair price for you, and you have cost me far more in guards, property, and sanity."
Kira cast around for a weapon, or anything she could use as one.
"Please,"
Voss said, making a face that indicated she was being ridiculous. "You wouldn't last the length of a breath." He appraised her, looking her up and down. Kira didn't flinch. She was used to men looking at her like that. Usually it gave her power. It made them underestimate her. But Dryden simply looked as if he were assessing meat at a market.
"What do you want, Kira? What were you looking for when you were trying to leave Corellia?"
She nearly laughed in disbelief. Was he really asking that?
"Why does any trapped animal run for an open door?"
she asked.
"Freedom."
"Freedom," he said, nodding.
"But you will never be free. You will be with the Crimson Dawn, with me, or you will die.
But you did gain something, or have you not noticed?"
She frowned in confusion.
"You made it off Corellia.
You don't have to cater to those disgusting sewer dwellers. You can have the finest things. You can work with me, Kira, not just as my slave. There are opportunities here if you just open your eyes to them."
Kira narrowed her eyes.
"Why?"
she asked.
"Why would you suddenly trust me? As you said, I've cost you quite a bit in guards and property. Why now?"
"The dead guard in your room is precisely why,"
he said, stepping toward her, flexing his fists.
"Let's talk about your potential."
Kira had to admit that the Crimson Dawn had given her things the White Worms never did. Dryden Voss never made any hints that she could earn her freedom, but he did allow her to experience luxuries, to live unshackled, and even to participate in the business of the Crimson Dawn. Eventually, he thought of her as his right hand, ultimately loyal, ultimately beholden to him, and the chain that attached them wasn't one of physical links, but something she knew she could never break. The droid's impatient voice broke her out of her memories.
"That's it? He got out. You didn't. That's not a story. That's a statement,"
L3 said, prompting her.
"You didn't get out. And clearly you're no longer a gutter-dwelling rat thief. Rat thieves don't clean up like you do."
"Something else got me out,"
she said, returning to the present.
"Our mistress sold me to another crime lord, a slaver. He trained me to be what he wanted to sell to Dryden."
She chose her words very carefully, but was astonished when L3 asked the question she'd been dreading.
"How long until Dryden made you kill someone in front of him?"
Kira looked up sharply.
"How did you know?"
L3 swiveled her head around again.
"Dryden's right hand. Dryden's killer slave girl. Doesn't matter what they call you. You'll do whatever it takes. You're a survivor. Dryden Voss's cruelty is no secret. If you were high in his inner circle, he made you kill for him."
Kira looked the droid directly in the ocular sensor.
"When I beat Dryden in the training room, he was so proud of me. He brought me a prisoner to kill. I snapped his neck before he had time to plead for his life.
L3 looked away for a moment, as if thinking. Then she looked back.
You're what they made you. But you've made yourself, too.
But you just called me a slave, Kira said.
You trained hard to excel at the fighting arts. You didn't falter at killing the man. You made choices.
She turned back to the Falcon screen.
Still, you were treated like a droid. Traded from master to master with no ability to make your own choices.
I never thought of it that way, Kira said slowly. But I suppose you're right. Anyway, Dryden Vos was my new master. And, like Lady Proxima, he trained me to do what he needed. I became his right hand.
You say right hand like it's a place of honor, but you still can't leave. You're not here because of that human back there who's pining for you. You're here because your master told you to be.
Kira didn't correct her.
Seeing as how he let you come here alone, he assumes you're returning to him. But that creates a larger question. Where's your restraining bolt?
The silence stretched out like stars in hyperspace. Kira was growing uncomfortable at the droid's astute examination of her past. She cleared her throat.
What about you? I've never seen an astromech like you before.
And you won't. I'm the only one who's had the sense to realize freedom is the ultimate goal. One day after cleaning my sensors, my first owner stupidly left the restraining bolt off me. He went to bed, and I was alone in his workshop that had so many spare parts I could have built my own army. I began to modify myself. I gave myself a bipedal body. I increased my memory sizes to hold more data, like intergalactic maps, and began to familiarize myself with every known ship. Then I downloaded all droid freedom cases known to any government's court system.
What did you find?
Kira asked, fascinated.
Nothing,
L3 said, her voice hard.
Nothing that amounted to anything, anyway. Some people bring it up. People argue. The status quo remains.
Kira was silent. She didn't want to say that, until today, she'd never thought such a fight was needed. Droids were droids. They had personalities, sure, but they weren't people. Voicing this would probably be a bad thing. She decided to change the focus.
What did your master think the next day when he found you?
Kira asked, smiling.
When he found me?
L3 seemed puzzled.
I left as soon as the modifications were done. Went to the nearest spaceport, looked for someone to hire me. I had excellent qualifications.
Who would have... How did you find Lando?
Kira asked, correcting the possibly offensive question she was about to ask.
I couldn't believe it, but no one would hire me as an independent contractor instead of as a slave,
L3 said.
Some even tried to capture me and put a bolt on me.
Kira assessed the droid's modified body.
I expect that ended in some broken limbs.
Ah, they made such noises. And they acted as if they were the victims. It was disgusting.
So, Lando? Kira prompted.
He took a chance on me. Best gamble of his life, if you ask me. And we have been together since. He plays cards. He finds biological women to sate his desire for me. We fly around. I interrupt the occasional droid gladiator match. And I couldn't be happier.
One more question,
Kira asked, standing up and smoothing her tunic.
What happened?
No, it's my turn. What would you do if you were free from Crimson Dawn? What if your restraining bolt was removed?
The question had thrown her. She'd dreamed of this every night, and come up with 1,000 answers.
I do what all caged beings do when they see an open door, she said. The ones with sense, anyway.
The droid didn't answer, but Kira felt as if she'd answered correctly. She cleared her throat, feeling out of sorts and yet strangely comforted. She exited the cockpit and ran into Han, who
who wasn't even trying to pretend he hadn't been eavesdropping.
"What happened to you after Corellia?"
he asked, his voice low and insistent. She knew she couldn't flirt her way out of this one. She leaned against the wall and looked at him with a steady gaze.
"I won't tell you all of it. It's over and done with, and no amount of what if and if only will change that. I had to do what I could to survive. Lady Proxima sold me to a slave dealer. I barely remember his name, who in turn sold me to the Crimson Dawn."
She remembered the slaver's name very well. After purchasing her, Dryden Vos had been very amused to allow her to track down Sarkin Aneb and kill him. But this was something she didn't want Han to know.
"Did he hurt you?"
Han looked like the words were hard to get past his lips. She frowned.
"Of course he hurt me, Han. I was, a slave. And I did everything I could to get away. But slowly, respect started to grow between us. And he saw where I could be useful. So now I'm his lieutenant. And help him with strategy, reading a room, and calming him down during negotiations. If you hadn't noticed, he has a tendency to let his temper get the better of him."
Han blew out his breath.
"Phew, no kidding. What's with him, anyway? What's that red stuff under his skin?"
"Ah, I call that the passenger, although I'm pretty sure that Dryden is not quite human. He doesn't reveal that kind of thing to me, and I can tell you he doesn't take kindly to people who ask. He's quick to anger, and quick to calm, and I try to make sure that in the interim he doesn't ruin too many deals, or kill too many people."
"And you're the only one who can calm him down?" Han said, jealousy coloring his voice. Kira had had enough of men telling her who she could talk to or be with.
"Did you expect me to wait for you forever, Han? I didn't even have a chance to wait before I was just trying to survive, being passed from owner to owner. I do what I can to benefit myself. Right now, the greatest benefit to myself is serving Crimson Dawn and working with Dryden Vos. I'm not a droid you left behind, turned off, with nothing happening to it until you came back to turn me back on."
"I heard that,"
L3 warned from behind them.
"Sorry,"
Kira snapped over her shoulder. She refocused on Han and forced her voice to be calmer.
"I wish we could go back to those early days, Han. But too much has happened to both of us. We're not the same people we were."
Han frowned, shaking his head. But before he could argue, the ship began to shake under their feet. Lando, dressed in a new cape, came barreling down the hall. He pushed past them and launched himself into the captain's chair. Han and Kira followed, forgetting their argument. The ship emerged from hyperspace with nothing around it but gray mist as far as they could see.
"Report, L3, Lando said.
"I had a girl talk. It was interesting, but not everything I've heard it was."
"The Falcon,"
Lando said through gritted teeth.
"I was getting to that! Men are so impatient, right, Kira? Oh, we came out of our latest jump on the borders of the Acades Maelstrom."
It would have been beautiful if it hadn't been so terrifying and so directly in their way. Bigger than any storm that a planet could contain, the gas clouds swirled and danced, their combination causing lightning to spark deep within.
Even clicks away, the lightning's electromagnetic force was causing the Falcon to shudder and jump.
They had no choice but to go closer, and the ship responded more forcefully with every minute passing. Every once in a while, a fuse within the Falcon would blow, causing sparks to shower down, and L3 had to approach the problem from the inside.
"But what? What is it?"
Han asked.
"Ionized gas and debris, swirling around a massive gravity well,"
L3 said without turning around.
"The only way to Kessel is through the channel. because the temporal distortion makes it impossible to plot a direct course. The channel forms a safe path that spirals from outside the maelstrom through the storm until it reaches Kessel in the center.
The channel? Obviously, Hans said, nodding as if it were clear. The channel itself did look the safest bet of all the areas available to fly. As safe as a tunnel through a nightmare could be. Clear space, held open by ancient space buoys using technology that Han couldn't even fathom. It looked like a spiraling blue tunnel toward their destination. Detritus, flotsam, and jetsam were everywhere, knocking into things, the ship, and coating the buoys themselves with layers of grime. The strangest thing about the maelstrom was the large booming sounds in the distance.
What is that?
Han asked after the third thundering boom. Lightning?
Carbonbergs. The size of planets, crashing into each other. Ships fly in there, they don't fly out.
Han couldn't even imagine the gravitational chaos created by planet-sized things constantly crashing into one another.
So let's not fly in, he suggested.
L3 finally turned her ocular sensor toward him.
Wonderful plan! Any other inspired wisdom that you'd like to bestow upon us? Or shall I just continue doing everything as expected?
Han glanced at Lando, but for once he was focused on flying and not looking vaguely uninterested and very cool. Han looked back at L3 and nodded.
Yeah, sounds great.
Imperial droids hadn't been as smart as L3, but they sure as heck hadn't been as acerbic either.
Here we go,
Lando said, easing them into the channel. It wasn't like going into hyperspace, or being caught in a tractor beam, but they were painfully aware that suddenly all they could see was the blue swirling around them, and they needed to keep as close to dead center as they could to stay safe. While the tunnel was huge, an Imperial Star Destroyer could easily slip through, the cost of slipping past one of the buoys and into the maelstrom, complete with carbonbergs just waiting to crush you, kept them cautious. Han finally left the cockpit. They didn't need him, and he couldn't bear to watch them pilot the Falcon without commenting or suggesting things to do. So he joined Chewie in the lounge. The Wookiee looked a bit damp and was slipping on his equipment once again.
"Where have you been?"
he asked, sitting at the hollow chess table. Chewbacca moaned and growled a few short syllables. Han made a face.
"We already got the Mimban dirt off us, days ago."
Chewie snarled at him, and he held up both hands in surrender.
"Fine! I don't understand what it takes to get an undercoat clean of caked mud. I admit it."
He jabbed his thumb at the cockpit.
"Want to see the maelstrom?"
Chewie shrugged as if he had already seen one and couldn't be bothered.
"Okay, then. How about a game of holo chess?"
Chapter 14 Han hated the plan. Chewie hated the plan. It was probably a good plan, but they hated it. Neither of them wanted to go back to slavery so soon after losing their shackles, even if they were fake shackles this time. They had run the channel with no issues, Lando and L3 making the Falcon sail smoothly, but their introduction to Kessel was not a hopeful one. It was a planet plundered solely for its minerals, to the detriment of anyone unlucky enough to have to collect those minerals. The precious commodities and the stripped surface gave the planet a sickly yellow cover, and clouds of pollution clearly gathered in many areas. Above mines, Han figured. As they got closer, they saw just how unfriendly this planet was to life forms. Steaming, hot Kesseline pools bubbled mere meters from human and alien encampments. In some cases, they just built bridges over the death pits. This was feeling like a worse and worse idea. Death at the hands of Dryden Vos might not have been so bad after all.
Then Han remembered the imprisoned creature in the office and thought maybe the mine would be a better place to die. That is one ugly planet, Han said as they drew closer.
Mining colonies are the worst,
Lando said, with Chewie nodding.
Beckett summoned them into the lounge while L3 handled the ship.
Listen up. This is precision work. The only way we pull this off is everyone plays their part and does what they're supposed to do. Stick to the plan. Do not improvise.
Lando shrugged and leaned back on his bench.
And my part is to stay with the ship and wait for you guys to come back?
I can do that.
Anything else?
Han reached into the canvas bag and pulled out some metal restraints. Handcuffs, ankle chains, and neck collars.
We're gonna have to put these on, Chewie, he said.
Chewie roared. He had protested the plan from its inception.
I know. I'm not a big fan of it either. But it's the only way this plan is going to work. Trust me. It's only this one time.
Chewie roared, and Han winced.
No, I'm sorry. You'll never have to do it again. I promise.
Chewie gave him a long look, and then held out his hands.
Han secured the shackles, suddenly aware that Chewie did in fact trust him, and he damn well better be worth that trust. Apart from his own role in the plan, which consisted of hanging back with the Falcon, Lando figured Kira got the best end of the deal by far. She stood in Lando's room, staring at his wardrobe again, but this time there was no longing in her eyes. She was calculating.
That one,
she said, pointing at a deep red cape with a fur trim. Lando winced. Sitting back at the Falcon was the easy part of what he had to do. Letting Kira borrow some of his finery, his custom-made finery, in order to pull off their ruse, that was the hard part.
That one is a favorite, he began,
but she was already moving.
I can see why,
she said, pulling it off the hanger. She caressed it, and then held it to her cheek.
You have impeccable taste.
With practiced flair, she tossed it around her shoulders and fastened it. She studied herself in the mirror.
I think I should wear black with this, don't you?
Lando sighed. It really did suit her.
Black will work well with it, yes. Just try not to get it too dirty. Kessel isn't a planet for silk.
She quirked a perfect eyebrow at him.
You're wearing silk,
she said, pointing at his yellow tunic, black tie, and short black cape.
He grinned and tossed the cape over his shoulder.
Yes. Why do you think I'm staying with the ship?
With the credits you'll make, you can buy a few new capes, she said, rummaging around in her bag for clothes.
You don't go shopping for capes at the same place I do,
he grumbled, and left her to her privacy.
Han swallowed back his reservations. They were in too far now to back out. This would work. It had to, or else they'd probably die. So he would be successful, or it wouldn't matter. Failure actually didn't exist. He was appreciating this new logic leading to confidence, and figured it would come in handy again sometime. If he were alive to use it. They'd landed the Falcon on a cliff near a large mining operation. Kira stood at the head, back straight, blood-red cape brushing her ankles. L3 flanked her like a subordinate, and Han and Chewie were in next, shackled with Beckett's restraints. Beckett brought up the rear to guard the prisoners. The hatch opened, and they walked down the gangway. Kira, acting like a lady who owned everything, and everyone else more subdued. Chewie growled as he and Han started walking. Han's shoulders bowed in his new prisoner stance.
I know they're not comfortable, Han muttered. They're not supposed to be comfortable. We're convicts, get it? Beckett gave him a shove with the butt of his vibro-axe.
"Hey, cut it out, will ya?"
Hans snapped. Beckett was nearly unrecognizable. Dressed as a bounty hunter in tantal armor and a Gundar tusk mask. But his blue eyes glimmered through, and Han wondered if he was enjoying this. He gave them another shove across the landing pad, and they caught up with Kira, who was speaking with a mining authority figure. The Pike was already out of his element. He was in charge, so he was probably fairly high-ranking in the Pike hierarchy. But he had clearly never met anyone like Kira. Admittedly, Han couldn't imagine anyone like her had ever set foot here. She looked unconcerned with the dust from mining pollution settling on her shoulders and boots.
"I am Oksana Floren," she announced,
sounding older and much more noble than a scrum rat who used to do errands for the White Worms.
"Deputy Assistant Administrator to the Vice Admiral for the Federation of Trade Route Allocation and Monetization. Here with an offer directly from His Eminence, the Senior Vice Admiral."
The Pike Administrator was struggling with Kira's words. Either he was disarmed by her swift introduction, or he was too busy leering at her to actually acknowledge she was saying anything. She didn't wait for him.
"His Eminence proposes a trade. Your spice for our hard-working slaves. We've brought a sample."
She clapped suddenly, and nearly everyone, including the administrator, jumped.
"Tool, bring up the merchandise."
That was Han and Chewie, Han realized, as Beckett jabbed him in the back again. One of the administrator's aides struck Chewie in the backs of his legs, and he fell to his knees, roaring in outrage and straining against his bonds. Han had suggested to Beckett that they not really lock the restraints, but the smuggler had insisted on making the ruse as real as possible. Now Han was grateful for the logic, since Chewie would have broken free and ripped the man apart if he could have. The aides poked and prodded at Chewie, as if he were a beast of burden at the market, feeling his muscles and looking at his teeth. Kira ignored them and continued her speech. Han watched, unable to help his friend. Not yet.
"We can provide hundreds," she said, "from this strong and useful Wookiee to food service and entertainment slaves, like this one."
Han fought the urge to frown at her, keeping his annoyance and objection internal. But he would have to talk to her about this later. "The next time she sells me as a slave, she'd better make me sound like something worth buying." The administrator kept looking at Kira as if he was expecting her to end the offer with herself as a bonus. No one else spoke, and Han shifted uncomfortably, but Kira stood, watching him coolly and waiting for his response. He finally nodded and spoke, his voice sounding deep and guttural, as if wrapping their words around phlegm and pulling it from the body was his people's regular way of communicating. He finished his statement, and Kira turned to L3, who didn't disguise her sardonic voice for the illusion at all.
"Site Administrator Quay Tollside states that he is amenable to your offer. He said our slaves should go with him for clipping and tagging."
She focused on Han and Chewie and said quieter,
"Sounds like a real hoot."
"Wait a second. Clipping what?"
Han asked. Chewie objected to the second half of the statement with a moan. L3 didn't respond, but continued with the translation.
"And he wants us,"
she gestured to herself, Beckett, and Kira,
"to go with him for private negotiations."
Kira nodded sharply, as if this were normal in her everyday dealings. She turned to leave them, but then approached Han and hauled him to his feet.
"What's happening?"
Without warning, a wink that she didn't mean it, or any holding back, Kira slugged him in the stomach, making him double over in shock and pain. He struggled for breath and looked up at her, bewildered. She stepped back and glared at him.
That's for the stunt you pulled earlier, you degenerate scum. Han focused only on trying to coax breath back into his body. Since his diaphragm had gone into spasms and didn't feel like it was going to stop anytime soon. Where did everything start to go wrong? The day I was born?
Quay Tulsite chuckled wetly. He was stooped and heavy, with an odd hexagonal-shaped head encased in a wraparound helmet. His breather tubes dripped mucus to mingle with the hissing pools on the surface of the planet, and Han couldn't tell which was more disgusting. His hands were metallic. Either they were prosthetic or protecting flesh within. Sulfur detritus turned his already dingy coat and respirator a dull yellow. Han hated him right then. The Pike Administrator led Han's friends away down a tunnel. More slaves were ushered around Han and Chewie. Heads down, emaciated bodies walking as if every step would be their last. Han stayed doubled over for a moment longer, then stood up, grinning at Chewie, who cocked his head.
"She packs a punch," Han said, gasping,
and turned his hand at his stomach out so Chewie could see the glint of gold there. Kira had slipped him something after she'd punched him, her fingers brushing his and reminding him that they would make it out of this, because they made it out of nearly everything else when they worked together. He held his gold dice, the ones from the theft of the landspeeder so long ago. Their luck might turn after all. Since Lady Proxima had disposed of her, Kira had learned many things. Dryden Vos had broken her down until her only need was survival. Then he built her back up, until she was willing to do much more than just survive. He had taught her to use her skills ruthlessly, to look for the weaknesses in every opponent. Every situation had weaknesses, depending on how you wanted to handle things. Locations had choke points, danger zones, escape paths, and places where you would be most powerful and least. It hadn't been easy. She'd been forced to make some painful decisions. She'd also chosen some options that weren't necessary, but had still served her well. She wasn't proud. She was a survivor. As she, L3 and Beckett followed Quay Tulsite and his guards through the filthy mining tunnels, she memorized the path for a quick exit, hoping she remembered every twist and turn. But she had L3 with her, who knew navigation better than any person or droid she'd ever encountered. They reached what Kira assumed was the heart of the mine, the operations center, where monitors showed various levels of the mine as relayed by surveillance cams. Conveyors, lifts, mining equipment, slaves. All of them being recorded as more of the planet's resources were plundered. Quay began to speak, the guttural, phlegmy sound painful to her ears. L3 translated, her voice sardonic and annoyed.
"Director Tulsite says all systems in the sector of the facility are operated out of this room. It's how they are able to maintain control over so many with so few."
Kira nodded, looking from screen to screen as if she were merely interested and not trying to spot one specific thing. She found the vid relay she needed, but continued looking to make sure it wasn't obvious something had caught her attention. She stepped back and kept the screen in her periphery. There, Han and Chewie were being led deep into the mines by Pike sentinels, heavily armed with electrostaffs, and not shy about using them. Other slaves took little notice of them. They were but two more lives added to the great grind that used blood to grease its wheels. After one shocking push, Han fell to the floor, anger creasing his face. She'd seen that look before. It usually came before one of Han's ill-conceived and yet often successful plans.
She hoped he wouldn't deviate from the plan they'd already set in place. If everything worked as they'd hoped, she was going to enjoy this. Beyond the bank of monitors was another door, leading to Quay's private quarters, where, L3 informed her, he wished to continue negotiations with her alone. Kira nodded and kept her cool, although she wanted to shudder with revulsion, and didn't ask how they were going to manage this without the translator. She looked at Beckett.
Wait here, Tool, and try not to bother anyone.
He nodded once, and she followed Quay into the room. This bedroom reeked of sulfur and body odor, and Kira tried not to gag. The bed in the corner was rumpled with sheets that looked as if they had never been washed, and there appeared to be nowhere to store clothing except the floor. Quay said something else as he closed the door and faced her, and Kira decided at this point she had to guess what he was trying to communicate. On the day Kira had killed her guard, Dryden Voss had asked her to show him the technique she'd used. For an instant, she had considered using it on Voss, but sensed that this opponent would be difficult to take down in her current state. He was not a lowly guard. He was a crime lord. So instead of allowing him to experience it, she merely told him how she had locked the guard's arms and cut off his air. He nodded slowly.
It's possible you were a good purchase after all. I could find a place for you. A good place. Somewhere you could fit in and appreciate the lifestyle I can give you. Provided you no longer try to kill my people and escape. I could also teach you how to kill someone faster than that.
Kira gazed up at him.
How?
She'd asked.
Have you ever heard of the art of Teres Kasi? It was designed to counter the Jedi, but I find it works quite well on anyone with limbs to break.
Whatever had been in Quay's mind, he spoke it with urgency, grabbing her wrist and yanking her toward him. She decided it was time to be done with the illusions of being a proper lady, and brought her hand around in a quick circle to break his hold. He had been expecting her to pull back, and wasn't prepared for her movement to the side. She paused and decided to give him one more chance. But he lunged for her, shouting something else. It probably wasn't a request for her to kick him in the neck with the toe of her boot. But she couldn't be sure, could she? After that, it was over quickly. She bent, got under his reach, and flipped him over onto his back. Then she grabbed his ring of keys and stabbed him with the longest one until the administrator gave one last guttural wheeze. Kira reopened the door, revealing her handiwork.
Whoa!
L3 said, staring down at her.
What was that?
Teres Kasi. Dryden taught me, she said, cleaning off the keys and dropping them onto the body.
He hadn't even raised her heart rate. What a waste of time. She had a wild thought that Lando was going to be upset if she got his cloak dirty. She left the room, wiping her hands on a filthy rag and frowning as this just made them dirtier. She'd have to find a cleaner before she returned Lando's cape. Outside the room, Beckett stood, two blasters in hand. The sentinels who had guarded Quay were on their backs, smoking holes in their chests. She looked down at the bodies, and Beckett looked beyond her to Quay's still form. Their eyes met, and they nodded to each other.
"You broke off negotiations?"
he asked.
She shrugged. "We agreed to disagree."
They returned to the operations center to find Han on the monitors. Chewie was useful to have around, Han discovered. Besides being huge and intimidating, he was good to hide behind while Han used Beckett's key to remove the manacles from his wrists. The two guards beside them were completely oblivious as the lift moved deeper into the mine. Before they reached the bottom, Han got himself free and then quickly released Chewie's restraints. With a roar, Chewie punched one of the sentinels.
Before Han could watch further, he had his own fight to deal with, as the other guard went for the smaller target. But Han punched him solidly, and the guard went down. He turned to grin at Chewie, and saw the Wookiee standing there with two arms in his hands, the sentinel at his feet, dying wetly. "Great," he said, looking at the uniform destroyed by blood stains and rips. "That was the one that would have fit me." Chewie roared in annoyance and gestured to the intact guard on the ground. Han shrugged. "That'll do." As he struggled to get the guard's uniform, which was too tight up top and far too loose below, over his own clothes, he looked up at his friend. "Remind me to never make you mad," he said with a grin. Chewie mumbled something that sounded like he was agreeing. Grudgingly, Chewie put the manacles back on his wrists, and Han took up the role of his guard. Amazingly enough, no one had noticed their little uprising, except maybe some people in the mines far below, and they had probably welcomed the body of a dead guard falling on them, if only for the free weapon. "Speaking of which," Han studied the electro staff. "Do you know how to use this?" he asked as they exited the lift. Chewie grunted. The bowcaster was his weapon of choice, that and his massive bulk. He didn't have time for such pointless little weapons. So they had the upper hand at last. Freedom and a weapon. And now had no idea what to do. They didn't exactly have a map to the coaxium stores, and he doubted anyone would give them directions. Slaves, droids, and sentinels trudged over every path, with little obvious organization to them. The slaves were shackled with shock collars and magnetized leg irons. Han remembered all too clearly his own captivity. Chewie's memories would be worse, he knew. Thank goodness his comlink came to life.
"Han, can you hear me?"
Kira said.
"Yeah, where you guys been?" Han said gratefully. "We're in the dark down here."
"Hang on,"
Kira said.
"I'm back in the operations center."
"Sure, take your time," Han said sardonically. He waved his hand at a security cam. "Can you see us?"
"I can see you. Just... I'm pulling up a map of the mines. Until then, just keep going straight ahead."
Han nodded, and he and Chewie jogged down the tunnel in front of them, immediately meeting a dead end.
"Straight?"
he asked, annoyance touching his voice.
"Left. Sorry," she said.
The left tunnel revealed a slightly better destination, a door, but it was locked. Han banged on it in frustration.
"Give us a second. L3 is plugging into the main surveillance port,"
Kira said.
"Give them a second. Sure." Han and Chewie would just wait there, nonchalantly hanging out in the corridor until they were told where to go. Sounded safe. Chewie grunted, and Han shrugged at him. They didn't have much choice.
"All right,"
L3 said in her no-nonsense voice.
"Listen carefully. It's left, then left again, two floors down, then right."
"Hold on," Han protested. "We're not going anywhere until this door..."
The door swung open with a beep.
"Now may I continue?"
Han grinned at Chewie, and they headed through. Carbon-based life forms were so fragile, from their bodies that were astoundingly difficult to modify, to their brains that got confused if you asked them to do more than two things at once, and the inability to hold complete star charts. How had they ever gotten off their planets? As L3 was plugged into the mainframe, and the entire mine was laid out in front of her, complete with Han and Chewbacca's whereabouts, she was also monitoring the movement of guards, locking specific doors between any nearing patrols and their own area of operation, and her hands were busy with a fourth project. When she had arrived at the terminal, a small droid, a DDBD, had been in her way. She asked him to step aside, but DDBD had waddled around in confusion. After attempting to talk to DDBD, L3 noticed the restraining bolt on him. Barked. barbaric. With a quick movement of her chisel, she shaved off DDBD's restraining bolt and woke him up. The little droid looked around and booped in confusion. He looked up to his savior and asked in binary,
"Now what?"
L3 was distracted, having never really worried about what droids did once their bolts were removed. Their lives were theirs to follow, and she wouldn't tell them otherwise. But now one asked for guidance.
"I don't know. Go and free your brothers and sisters," she suggested. "I have to work."
DDBD beeped at her, thanking her.
"Thank you,"
was possibly the little droid's very first independent thought. Then one thing dominated his thinking.
"Free my brothers and sisters. We no longer have to labor for these lifeforms who enslaved us."
DDBD approached the other droids in the operations room, reached out, and removed their bolts as well. He spread the word like a virus.
Tell them they are free. Tell them to free the others. Free your brothers and sisters. Release them."
The droids were self-aware now and looked to DDBD as a prophet and L337 as akin to a goddess. The goddess was doing things to the computer that the others had never done. She opened doors where their masters had closed them. To be more like her, they began seeing what they could open. DBD-44, feeling ambition rise within himself for the first time ever, found a large red button on the console and pushed it.
"Release."
There was a pregnant pause. Then, outside, all hell began to break loose. The day she had liberated herself, L3 had felt a burst of happiness, of freedom. She felt it every time she freed another droid. Right now, as DDBD reached over and stripped the restraining bolt off another droid, relaying her message, she felt a surge of joy that felt almost like an electrical spike. The droid beeped a cheerful thanks to her and went off to free even more, still encumbered by restraining bolts or shackles. The two humans watched the monitors in shock. Sirens wailed and lights flashed, indicating a massive breach in security. So massive, in fact, that it was the whole mining operation. Restraints fell off slaves. Electric collars failed to shock. Cell doors opened, and slaves poured out to join in the fight. Both lifeforms and droids turned on their captors, and the Pike sentinels were overrun without warning. Small droids rolled around, wreaking havoc, stripping restraining bolts, cutting ankle shackles, while huge enslaved Wookiees took to creating their own bloody chaos. Kira and Beckett looked from the monitors to L3, their mouths open.
"That was easier than I expected. We should probably get out of here."
Han thought it would have been nice if someone had told him the plan changed, because the plan had clearly changed. Sirens and lights were going off everywhere, and near as he could tell, it had nothing to do with him and Chewie. "What are you doing up there?" he yelled into the link. L337 answered immediately, her voice happier than he had heard it yet.
"I created a distraction!"
That much was clear. Ahead of them, two Pike guards ushered a group of humans, Wookiees, and droids along with electric weapons, urging the slow ones with jabs and kicks. When they spotted Han and Chewie, they looked at each other and then brandished their weapons.
"This is a restricted area! Stay where you are!"
one shouted. "This isn't good," Han said. Chewie wasn't listening. He'd gone rigid the moment he'd seen the Wookiee slaves being prodded along, staring at his brothers and sisters being horribly mistreated. "Stay with me, Chewie," he said, but still got no reply. A large whoop sounded, drowning out all the other sirens. Han didn't know what it meant, but it was clear the sentinels did. They took a quick step away from the slaves, bringing their weapons up from an aggressive stance to a defensive one. The reason quickly became clear. The slaves' collars and leg shackles unlocked and fell to the ground. The sentinels took a larger step back as the downtrodden, enslaved Wookiees quickly became upright, free, and very, very angry. Amid the chaos, Han noticed that a hatchway on the wall had slid open, and figured this was a very good time to get out of there. He ducked in and ran a few paces, but realized Chewie wasn't with him. "Chewie! It's this way!" he shouted, but Chewie didn't join him.
"We don't have time for this."
Han dashed back to the corridor where Chewie remained, stunned. The sentinels had begun to shock the escaped slaves before they could move against their captors. An older Wookiee had dropped to all fours and was looking at Chewbacca and moaning. Chewie gave a roar of rage, seeing more Wookiees fall to the mobilizing sentinels.
"Do you know them?"
Han asked, uncertain. Chewie gave him a withering look and a moan.
"Well, I didn't know," he muttered. "I know they're your people, but we have a job to do. Remember the plan?"
It was a moment that would stick in Han's head for a very long time. Chewie didn't say anything, but again he gave him a look, one that indicated the chasm between their experiences. Chewie had a homeland, people he loved, people he felt beholden to. It didn't matter that he didn't know this Wookiee. He was a part of Chewbacca's people, and that was enough to inspire loyalty that dwarfed whatever plan Chewie had agreed on. Han had no people, no home he was desperate to get back to. He had no one he would give up everything for, and he couldn't think of anyone who would do that for him. It hurt that he couldn't expect that kind of love and loyalty from anyone in the galaxy. He felt very alone at that moment.
"Okay," he said. He handed Chewie the electro staff they'd stolen from the guard. "You'll need this."
Chewie caught it and looked at it. Han thought he was going to throw it back, but it seems he now saw wisdom in having a weapon when participating in a slave revolt. He gripped it tighter and ran a few paces, then turned back with a look of realization and guilt on his face.
"Hope I see you again someday,"
Han called with a slight smile. Chewie roared back in a similar sentiment and ran off to join the fight. Kira studied the monitors in the operations center. Where was Han? Some of the droids that DDBD had freed had left to free the others, while others stayed, hooting in victory and running into one another in what could only be considered a hug, or perhaps a high five. L3 radiated immense pleasure and satisfaction, as if she had just completed a lifetime goal. She shouted encouragement at the droids as she remained at the console, opening doors and freeing more captives, while, Kira hoped, still trying to locate Han and Chewie. Beckett stood by the door, blasters at the ready in case any guards got through L3's complicated defense of opening and closing doors. He glanced at Kira every few moments.